Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Once again, we give you the latest on health and healing so you can live a longer and healthier and happier life. Our first study comes from a major research project that was done at the National Institutes of Immunology in India. And they say that a deficiency in a specific amino acid in the body may contribute to the aging process. Researchers examined the effects of the amino acid taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E, on health and lifespan in various animal models. The findings show that taking taurine supplements could reverse age-related taurine loss and improve healthy lifespans in worms, rodents, and non-human primates. Now, by the way, taurine is a semi-essential micronutrient. It's abundantly present in animals, including humans. Previous studies have indicated that taurine deficiency during early life can lead to functional impairment in skeletal muscles, your eyes, and your nervous system, which are often associated with age-related disorders. So they did this study. They measured blood taurine concentrations at different ages, and then they found that those who had the taurine had the best outcomes. So that's important. Remember, taurine levels decrease by over 80% throughout your lifespan. So by taking taurine supplements each day, you're doing yourself a big favor in slowing down the aging process. Also, it is believed that taurine levels are essential to increasing lifespan, not just slowing it down. So that's important. In fact, they found that in the lifespan of worms and mice, they increased the lifespan by 23% having taurine in there. And by the way, just to give you an idea, when you have enough taurine, you have better strength, coordination, cognitive function, and key markers in the aging process. So you're literally going to have better bones, better metabolism, better immunological health as you take taurine. So just one more piece to the puzzle. Now, another important piece we've discussed extensively, and this is mindfulness meditation. This is a study from Shenzhen University in China, and they say mindfulness meditation could mitigate the adverse effects of fatigue on emotional processing. What's the one thing we all have noticed in our lives when we're stressed? Any kind of stress. Stress that we just can't shake, that we can't deal with, or acute stress, something that happens to us, you know, like, give you an example, people living in Florida, where I'm at, after the last hurricane, there was a nonstop line. All the gas was gone at all the gas stations, and it went clear up to the Florida border, going into Alabama or in Georgia. Now imagine along the way you had a flat tire. Not good. You ran out of gas. Really not good. Think of the acute stress that's going to create. And that stress creates hormones that increase, like cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, and that can dysregulate your heart rhythm. Yeah, you can have irregular heartbeats because of that, and that can lead to strokes. So dealing with stress in any form is important, but the most common stress that we all face is a living angst, where something just doesn't feel right, that we feel it like in our gut, you know, something's telling me something's wrong. You may not know what it is, but you don't feel good. Well, that's the kind of stress that mindful meditation and psychotherapy and regressive hypnosis can all help. But in this case, past studies suggest that irrespective of its cause, doesn't matter what causes it, fatigue always follows intense negative emotions. You get angry, you get tired. You get stressed, you get tired. And you get sick. Why? Because your immune system is now vulnerable to all forms of infections. I've counseled a lot of people who have herpes, and not only is it embarrassing, but they're afraid of spreading it, and rightly so. The deadliest herpes is human herpes 6. That is really bad. But working at the Institute of Applied Biology for all those years, and working with a large group of people who had herpes, I was able to come up with protocols that could negate it. But one thing I found, and I was working with Dr. Donald Mullen of the Albert Ellis Center on this, he said, I'm noticing that people who he counseled who had a stressful situation, that's when they're most likely to break out with herpes the next day or two. So then we're connecting the central nervous system and herpes, and I'm trying to come up with therapies or protocols that would mitigate that. So just understand the more stressed you are, the more likely you are to have all forms of viruses that have been dormant or at least held in check now manifest, and you end up with all forms of illnesses, colds, flu, even in the middle of summer when there's no reason to be sick. That's what stress does. So it doesn't matter what its cause, fatigue can intensify negative emotions, because the more fatigued you are, the more angry you get, the more you say, well, I don't feel like doing this, that, or I can't do it. Either way, you feel overwhelmed, and that reduces positive feelings, because no two thoughts can be in the mind at the same time. You can't be happy and sad, angry and smiling. You can't be constructive and destructive, positive and negative. One will dominate, and whichever energy dominates in that moment, your biochemistry follows. And that's why it's so important not to personalize stuff. Look, all the time when I'm writing commentaries, investigative reporting articles, white papers, when I'm doing broadcasts, when I'm debating different subjects, I get a lot of people who disagree. And some of them are not reasonable in their disagreements. You know, they're really angry, negative, toxic people. So they didn't need me saying something they disagree with. They're just that way all the time. And they always walk around feeling that they're right, you're wrong. If they feel bad, can't do something, it's your fault. They never look in the mirror and are honest with themselves. So I stay away from those people. I don't allow them in my life professionally or personally. I hope that you can take that lesson, because you can never be the missing part of another person's emotional imbalance. You can't be the positive part of a negative perception of life. You just get drained. These people are like, you know, these people are like a car battery. When the lights are left on, it drains. All right? Be around people who infuse energy, and you'll feel it. We all feel better when we're laughing. You know, it's very good. And we actually have all the different biochemical markers that improve when we're laughing. I worked with a gentleman years ago who had an irreversible medical condition that would ultimately lead in death. And he got some advice, and he started watching comedies. And he started going to comedy clubs and began to laugh. And he did a whole book on this. So laughter is important to negate negative emotions. But so is mindful meditation. Because with mindful meditation, you're able to put everything into context. And you'll focus on being present in the moment and observing your breathing, observing your past feelings, observing your emotions and sensations. And that in turn can help reduce the intensity of negative feelings. Like someone says, Gary, I don't like you. I said, that's fine. I have no problem with that. Get in line. But I like me, and I'm going to continue liking me. And your words are not going to make me feel bad about myself. The fact that you're weaponizing a word means you shouldn't be in my life. There's nothing you're going to say that's constructive. You're intending to destroy my self-confidence. You want me just to go away and retire and go to a village and just sit around watching everyone else die slowly, playing golf, you know, and eating cheeseburgers. Not going to happen, friend. So have confidence that you're stronger, you're better than the people who don't like you. Mindful meditation is one tool, regressive hypnosis another, that reduces the intensity of negative emotion stimuli. And that makes a big difference. This was published in Frontiers in Behavior Neuroscience. So let's deal with that, because we're in a very negative environment by some people, not all. Now, there is a substance you probably heard of for the first time in a 10.5-hour webinar I did on what to do if you're having adverse effects from COVID, long-term COVID, or maybe from the vaccines, the side effects, whatever it was. There are therapies that can help. And these therapies were developed by people who are all top doctors in the field, and who all got vaccinated, and one of them had a life and death experience. I mean, she was right in there to be intubated. She couldn't breathe, and she couldn't think, but she is an MD, PhD, and she thought she knew the outcome for over 90% of the people who get intubated. They die. And she said that intubation is not dealing with the real cause, so she had an ambulance take her back to her clinic. She got all of her staff together, and she did everything she could. Well, lo and behold, she overcame that problem. She also overcame the premature aging of her brain. She was in dementia. She's only in her early 50s, and otherwise in ideal health. She reversed that. One of the things of many that she did was Methane Blue, M-E-T-H-Y-L-E-A-N-E, Methylene Blue. And Methylene Blue, now in a new study from the University of Texas, shows promise in improving short-term memory. Now, mind you, she had prematurely aged her brain, she thought about 30 years. And I see this all the time in people who've had COVID, long COVID. They can function, but not normally. So a single oral dose, one dose of Methylene Blue, results in an increase in MRI-based response in brain areas that control short-term memory and attention. And that was published in the journal Radiology. That's important. So I looked deeper into Methylene Blue. It's used to treat a blood disorder in which oxygen is unable to release effectively to body tissues. This was done in animal studies, and it's shown that a single low dose of Methylene Blue enhances long-term contextual memory to conscious recall of the source of circumstances of a specific memory extinction memory, a process in which a conditional response from stimuli gradually diminishes over time. So you simply, what did you do in a high school? I've forgotten. And so a lot of our memories are blocked. They're still there, but they can't be activated. Methylene Blue can activate those dormant memories. This is what they say. Quote, although the memory-enhancing effects of Methylene Blue were shown in rodents in the 1970s, the underlying neurological changes in the brain responsive for memory improvement and the effects of Methylene Blue on short-term memory and sustained attention tasks have not been investigated, right? Our team decided to conduct the first multi-model MRI study of Methylene Blue in humans. 26 healthy participants between 22 and 62 were enrolled in the double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled clinical trial to measure the effects of Methylene Blue on the human brain during working memory and sustained attention tasks, meaning you go to do something and you know what you're doing, you're focused, and you can do it. Whereas someone else that has dementia, they don't know what to do, right? Can you do this? I can't do that. They can't recall. The results showed Methylene Blue increased response to the bilateral insular cortex, an area deep within the brain associated with emotional response during tasks that measured reaction time to visual stimuli. So it can increase your reflex. It can increase that, oh yeah, I got it. That's what it can do. So that's important. Wow, is that important. But when she was on the program and she was telling us about all the things she was taking, that was only one of many. But I wanted to see what Methylene Blue would do. So I started doing more research on it. Just one more piece to the puzzle. Now from the University of Chicago, anti-anxiety medication limits empathetic behavior in rats. Rats given a benzodiazepine and an all anti-anxiety medication were less likely to free trapped companions because the drug lessened their empathy, according to a study in University of Chicago neuroscientists. Now, I've worked in a laboratory for decades and decades. I do both applied research and basic research. And I can tell you that if you take the rats out of a cage, which I did, never euthanized one, in fact, to the contrary, they all lived longer lives. And they were happy. They had this huge space, you know, over 3,000 square feet. They could run around, and they had a phenomenal diet, all organic and fresh and raw, and they had the best music, and they were living longer than the wild rats outside. So in any case, and by the way, in all those years, thousands of people who came by in the evenings and sat behind a glass wall because they'd freak out with all these rats running around. I was never bitten, never scratched. And certain rats would come up and sit on my shoulders when I'm sitting there working. And they lived much longer lifespans. So when you have research, and this was just published in the Journals of Frontiers in Psychology, it validates studies that show rats are emotionally motivated to help other rats in distress. In the latest study, rats treated with This psychiatric doc did not open the door to a restrainer device containing a trap rat, although control rats routinely freed their trap companions all the time. So that's what happens, mind you, when you're on these psychiatric drugs, especially for anti-anxiety. So if you're wondering, why does a person lack empathy, this is just one more piece of the puzzle trying to figure that out. And by the way, mind you, stress is a part of this also. And it tells us a lot. What if we all were more empathetic? It'd be a better world, wouldn't it? I think so. And just mind you, helping others should be your new drug. Not a medication. Just look every day in your life and ask yourself, what can I do to honor my spiritual values? And that is not related to religion. It's just something all religions have or should really emphasize. Don't just sit in the mosque or the congregation hall. Go out and do something to make it better that day for someone who couldn't do it on their own. That honors your spirituality. And just keep playing it forward in everything you do. Don't lie. That also is important. You think it's not easy? It is easy. It's easy to tell the truth. It's really difficult to lie, because then you just got to keep lying and lying and lying and lying. Just tell the truth. If people can't handle it, then that's good, because it tells you who shouldn't be in your life. And finally, University of Tokyo, lower levels of coenzyme Q10 in your blood is associated with multiple system atrophy. That's terrible. A neurodegenerative disease known as multiple system atrophy, or MSA, affects both movement and involuntary body functions. And so the question was, will coenzyme Q10, if it's deficient, and help that develop? And the answer is yes. So you want coenzyme Q10. You don't want these mutations occurring in your body. All right? That's just the latest in health and nutrition information. Go to GaryNall.com. You'll see all my new articles, webinars. If you didn't catch them live, you can see it there. Also, people have been asking me about what I do when I lecture to the both two different groups, the anti-aging group that was on campus, the anti-aging group that was a control group doing it from home. Same information. And I found that they're more likely at home to stick on the protocol if they're motivated at the conscious level. So every week, every Sunday, I create a brand new insight into the human psyche. What can we do to be better human beings for ourselves first, and then extend that to others? What can we do to be more empathetic? What can we do to look at the world and see it for what it is, not what we were told to believe, but with our own eyes and our own conscious awareness? And if you want to see some of those, you can go to GaryNall.com, you can go to GaryNall YouTube, and you can go to Odyssey, or you can go to Rumble and download the Classroom on the Air. I've been doing those every day on a Classroom on the Air, and I have done several of those. So if you want to be motivated, if you want to be inspired, there's your answer. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. One of the things that I've done throughout my entire career is to do original in-depth investigative reports. I presented these in national publications, in broadcast, in documentaries, in white papers, and I've done hundreds upon hundreds. This is just the latest. I suggest that if you trust the information, and it's all footnoted, there's real scholarship involved, please share it with everyone that you have a contact with. This is not a time to be passive, just to take stuff in and not do anything with it, because lives are at stake. The title of this article is, Does EMF, that's electromagnetic frequencies and wireless devices, endanger children's health? Richard Gale and myself have worked on this, and this is just one part of a larger article that's published on GaryNall.com. Katie, a outstanding research editor, has helped on that as well, and we're presenting it exclusively on our radio stations. One of the many goals of wrapping the planet in a pulsating dome of 5G electromagnetic frequencies is to increase the human community's connectivity with each other. We are told that that is a good thing. In fact, virtually all of the advertising that we've seen for the past several years has not shown a single hint that there's a limitation or a downside. But we have uncovered that downside. We are invited to imagine the spectacular wonder of a single integral system for communication, financial efficiency, international banking and transportation, and a large variety of technological tools at our fingertips to ease life's struggles. There's also a darker specter to monitor every movement of the world's growing population. Consequently, wireless electromagnetic frequency radiation, EMF, and microwave exposure and Wi-Fi are becoming increasingly more omnipresent and will continue to permeate every aspect of the common daily life without any escape. Yet the warnings about the health risks and effects of electromagnetic frequency exposure, especially for vulnerable populations such as children, have been well documented for many decades and are virtually going unheeded. Aside from a casual nod by those who are mandated to regulate EMF levels and monitor its adverse effects and risks, the scientific evidence for a crucial cause of alarm continues to mount. And this is especially true for protecting children from unnecessary EMF, which is now indisputable. Federal agency capture by the telecom industry and the developers of wireless, microwave, and other EMF producing technologies have thwarted every single effort to properly regulate this technology. As a result, we've only heard one side of this story. It's great. We should all embrace it without any question. And of course, if your child is sleeping with a cell phone on or a tablet on under their pillow, not a problem. If they're spending hours a day in front of a computer screen or having it on their lap, not a problem. If they're in class, sitting within 18 to 20 inches of a monitor, not a problem. Yes, they're big problems. Children are exposed to EMF from various wireless devices like smartphones, tablets, and Wi-Fi routers. Although these devices generally comply with FCC guidelines, there are serious concerns about the cumulative effects of exposure, particularly for children who use wireless devices extensively, which is most children. Studies show that children's exposure to EMF from wireless devices far exceeds recommended safety limits, especially when devices are held close to the body for prolonged periods, which they almost always are. By examining available research studies from independent peer review and universities conducted by prominent scientists, we have learned much more about the crisis facing children who are increasingly being exposed to EMF and how that can guide parents and communities to take necessary precautions to protect their children. Perhaps the most important study investigating the impact of EMF emissions from electronic devices on adolescent social and brain development is the Multi-Institutional Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study, which enrolled 10,000 children and followed them for decades, or at least one decade. Those who spent the most hours per day on cell phones and computers and other wireless items had the highest rate of rapid thinning of the cortex. That's directly associated with premature aging. But it's worse. Cancer risk. A dozen years ago, the International Agency for Research on Cancer classified electromagnetic fields as, quote, possibly carcinogenic to humans, end quote. Research conducted by prominent scientists like Lennart Hardell and Michael Carlberg in Sweden has identified links between long-term exposure to electromagnetic fields and an increased risk of childhood leukemia. These studies analyzed data from children exposed to various sources of electromagnetic radiation, including power lines and wireless devices. And since then, other studies have confirmed that children living in the proximity of overhead high-voltage power lines that people think nothing of Well, you should, because those lines have a power to reach inside the developing body, and that increases the child's risk of leukemia, further supporting EMF's potential carcinogenic effects. This is not only true for thermal radiation, but also for non-thermal, low-intensity, non-ionizing radiation, now believed to be contributing to the rising incidence of brain cancers, notably glioblastomas, in children and adolescents across developed nations. Government regulators fail to address this danger. The Environmental Health Trust notes that government regulations for wireless cell phone use were evaluated by the anatomical basis of a 220-pound man's head. You heard me right. That's all they did. So if you are a 220-pound man, that's what they're saying is the same as a child's head. It is completely, totally unscientific. It is fraud at its worst. Children's heads are notably smaller, their skulls are thinner, and therefore children can absorb up to 10 times the radiation in the bone marrow of their skulls than adults. The University of Utah analysis reported that EMF exposure increased by a compound rate of 15% for every millimeter closer to a mobile phone's antenna. EHT criticizes the FCC cell phone radiation standards for ionizing these, quote, unique vulnerabilities in children's anatomy as well as pregnant women. Younger brains will also proportionally absorb more radiation into the eye and into the brain's gray matter. That has consequences. Another carcinogenic risk is electronic radiation's disruption of stem cell activity. Throughout the course of their development, children have more active stem cells than adults. Stem cells are far more sensitive to microwave radiation than our differentiated cells. This makes children more susceptible to DNA double-strand breaks, contributing to carcinogenic mutations. Yet, no warnings, no advice, no caveat emptor, consumer beware. Let's look at the neurological and cognitive effects. EMF's deleterious effects on the nervous system are well documented. Despite oxygen's crucial role in biological reactions, oxygen can also contribute to toxic byproducts known as reactive oxygen species, which damage proteins and lipids and DNA. However, the body's antioxidant defense system keeps radical oxygen under control. A Turkish review of the medical literature shows that several studies report that EMF exposure results in oxidative stress in different tissues, cellular DNA, and will increase free radical concentration, hence prematurely aging the body, making it more susceptible to all forms of disease. Early experimental studies conducted by Nora Falco and her colleagues showed that exposure to cell phone radiation can alter brain activity in regions closest to the antenna. These studies utilized brain imaging techniques to measure changes in brain metabolism and neuronal activity after exposure to electromagnetic fields. Consequently, quantifying abnormal changes was very precise. The clinical significance of Falco's findings raised concerns about the potential neurological effects of long-term exposure to electromagnetic radiation, which has since been validated in multiple further studies. Separate studies by the University of Southern California and UCLA suggest an association between prenatal exposure due to maternal mother's cell phone radiation and neurodevelopmental disorders in their children afterwards. These studies highlight the critical importance of considering the potential risks of electromagnetic radiation during the crucial stages of child development. A Yale University mouse study found that pregnant mice, when exposed to cell phone signals, give birth to animals with hyperactivity and impaired memory. But it gets worse. There's genetic damage also. There's a very large body of animal research study confirming EMF's adverse effects on genetic expression of DNA integrity. However, More clinical trials on humans need to be conducted to bring the crisis to greater public attention. EMF's long-term effects on the male and female reproductive systems of prepubescent children needs to be investigated more thoroughly. Given the rapid use and rise of gender dysphoria beginning in early ages, it is incumbent to better understand EMF's impact on child development now that wireless devices are being used daily. Interruption of the reproductive system's metabolism from mobile phones is being found. EMF's exposure has a broad range of adverse effects. These include decreases in sperm mobility, protein synthesis disorders, abnormal nitric oxide levels, and antioxidant disruption in germ cells. Research also indicates that EMF exposure affects calcium ion channels, potentially disrupting intracellular calcium signals, which play a crucial role in cellular processes. We also have to add in sleep disturbances. Sleep is crucial for proper physical and cognitive development of children. However, exposure to electromagnetic fields from wireless devices may disrupt sleep patterns in children. A 2010 study found that exposure to radio frequency EMF from mobile phone base stations was associated with sleep disturbances. Similarly, another study reported an association between exposure to electromagnetic fields from wireless devices in the home and sleep disturbances in adolescents. Let's take a look at education and awareness. Public activism needs to pressure childhood associations and government agencies to revise regulations regarding EMF exposure limits. This includes establishing specific guidelines for non-ionizing radiation, considering cumulative exposure, and incorporating research findings on potential long-term health risks associated with EMFs. Given the increasing data being gathered, as research continues to identify EMS effects on the human biology, the precautionary principle, critical for children, should be applied, no exceptions. Once the technology is developed to dramatically lessen radiation exposure, it is essential to limit children's exposure, and especially in schools and bedrooms where children spend a substantial amount of time during every 24-hour cycle. Organizations like the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended limiting children's exposure to wireless devices. Although the Academy emphasizes the importance of educating parents and teachers and healthcare professionals about EMS risks, no notable funding has been spent to make these health concerns a national emergency. Calling it out is one thing. Following up by doing something is altogether different. And that seems to be where we are limited. Of course, schools and parents can adopt strategies such as wired internet connections. You don't need wireless. Reducing screen time and providing distance from wireless devices to minimize children's exposure. For example, putting on speakerphone. There are actually headsets that you can get that go from the head into the ears, into the cell phone, that trap a lot of this EMF exposure. Even your computers, there are now devices you can use to limit EMF exposure while watching a computer or monitor. But this has to be a national educational campaign, and it cannot be controlled by the very manufacturers who make every effort to limit our knowledge on the downside. I ask you this, think for a moment. When was the last time in any major newspaper or magazine or television program or PBS, NPR, that you saw a documentary or outside scientists with specializations in the field of electromagnetic frequencies and health be interviewed? You haven't. Manufacturers are making efforts to develop low radiation devices, such as cell phones with reduced specific absorption rate values. Unfortunately, there have not been sufficiently regulatory pressure on telecom corporations to make this advancement happen now. Other research is focused on exploring electromagnetic shielding to design techniques to reduce exposure risk without compromising technological functionalities. Again, innovation of electronic devices continues to trump public health profit above health. When we reflect upon our politicians and institutions' repeated claims that we care about the health and well-being of your children, well, we need to peer behind the words to expose the doublespeak. Today, the most aggressive voices want to persuade us that the government is more responsible as a parent than the children's own biological kin. Only recently are parents waking up and pushing back against this collective social conditioning. However, it required over 2 years of passive obedience for parents to realize they were sheepishly following the unjustified, unscientific government demands to close schools, quarantine children, and mandate mask wearing, social distancing, and vaccine for all children, infants, and toddlers, and adolescents. When will parents realize they may be innocently contributing to their kids' delayed physical, mental, and emotional development by giving them free rein, the government, over what should be done for our children, and the children free rein over the use of their mobile phones, laptops, tablets, and other EMF and Wi-Fi emitting devices? This is not an issue based upon class or prestige. Rich or poor, politically left or right, no child is excused from EMF risks. Since the regulatory officials at the EPA and FCC are fully compromised, fully controlled by the private and telecom and wireless industries and their supporters and paid lobbyists in Congress, parents must assume the responsibility to monitor and control their children's exposure to EMF radiation. This is available on GaryNall.com under articles, under 5G. And mind you, you will see in upcoming reports, they now have 6 and 7G. We do not need wireless. The problem is in the wireless. There's no problem with the wired. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Joining me on the phone is our executive producer and scholar in residence, Richard Gale. Richard, before we go to the issue of the day, and I'm going to ask our audience to see if they would like to contribute to this, I want him to call in on this new issue. As people in this audience know, I've always supported my entire adult life, and even when I was a teenager, gay rights. Because I don't see where a gay person, a lesbian as a woman, as a gay man, them having a desire to associate or relate with those of the same sex is a problem. It's their business. It's their right. We should respect that. I have friends who are trans. These are adults. In the years and years and years that I've known them, we've never had a conversation. Why should we? I don't ask anyone about their religious, political, financial, you know, belief system. That's their right. If they have a question about something, I'm open to discuss it with them, but I accept them. The issue is not with adults and their informed consent, what they choose, but rather with children. And California is doing something now that I believe we should all pay attention to, whether you support it or not. And if you support it, fine. Explain why. If you don't support it, call in and explain why. Here's a mother recently about to tell the council, for whatever it's worth, her feelings, because they, by law, they had to have a public hearing. But that doesn't mean these public hearings seem to make any difference in California or other places as well. But listen carefully what she's saying, because this law would prevent you as a parent from allowing your child to go through their changes, not surgical changes, nothing to the body, no hormones, but rather just to go through. If they want to believe they're one sex or another, let them do it. Let them dress up, let them act out, because the vast, vast, vast majority return to normal, or at least what they were biologically born as. And those who don't, then you have to also understand there may be hormones affected here that can actually turn a body chemistry into the direction of the opposite sex, which then allows their perception to be of the opposite sex. That's understandable. I wasn't doing that research, but I was aware of the person who did it in New York, Dr. Lawrence Lashan. I would sit on meetings on a monthly basis where they were discussing this at length, because it was bringing in a missing factor, because we already know. You give the greatest athletes in the world an opportunity and train and excel, they will. Now take a mediocre athlete and give them hormones, and they'll suddenly be competing right up with the best. And we've seen the cheating in sports. A woman won a gold medal and then went to prison because of doping. Johnson, one of the greatest runners in history, and yet he had to cheat, so he took drugs and was disbarred from running. Look at all the other athletes in football, bodybuilding, baseball in particular. For 60 years, nobody broke Roger Maris, Babe Ruth's record, and a shorter Roger Maris record, and suddenly everybody broke it by a huge margin. That's not physically possible. They were all on hormones. So what I'm saying is this. The moment you put someone on a hormone, including people who are fine with their own sex, but suddenly you're giving them one of the antipsychiatric drugs for depression or anxiety, and suddenly they're acting out. I mean, some will go out and kill people, hurt themselves, and we've seen this. This is the untold story in psychiatry. Who's committing these murders and why? The vast majority of the killers have been on some form of drug, psychiatric drug, and you look at the side effects, and it's due to the side effects of the drug. So why would we assume that giving hormone therapy for the rest of your life to a young child is a good thing with no side effects? There's nothing but side effects. And to me, this is child abuse and should not be allowed. When that child has gone through all of their different phases and they decide, I want to transition, fine. You're 18. You have a right to do that. Please understand. Look at all the thousands of people transition and then transition back. Look at the supposed truths by your support core group that ended up being lies, and look at all the danger that occurs. And if they can do that, then go ahead, you know, and make your transition. It's your right, it's your body. But what about a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 2-year-old? What about someone just born and it's determined that they don't like the sex they're in? Literally, I'm saying this is not made up our hypothesis. So in the state of California, if you interfere in what your child wants to be known as, then you could have your child taken away and you could be fined as an unfit adult, a parent, and subjected to criminal fines and even imprisonment in the state of California. So if you have a 4-year-old daughter who feels that she's a tomboy and wants to be a boy and wants to be known as Dave, well, suddenly if you say no, you just enjoy your life, play act, whatever you want, and then we'll see later. No. State authorities could come in and take your child. That's literally, not figuratively, the law. Listen to what she has to say. See if this concerns you.
I am Erin Friday, lead of Our Duty, an attorney and a mother of a girl who used to believe that she was a boy. AB 957 is the first bill in the nation to codify into law that a parent who does not affirm the gender identity of the child is abusive. There is no nuance in this bill. It matters not the age of the child, the absurdity of the identity, adopted comorbid mental health issues, or persistence. Family court judges will be compelled to favor the child who will affirm the child's delusion. Parents can easily game the system and use gender as retaliation against each other. What happens when one parent will socially affirm the child but will not agree to medicalize? Does the parent willing to do more transitioning prevail? AB 957 unambiguously states that the health, safety, and welfare of the child includes a parent's affirmation of the child's gender identity. If it passes, it will be child abuse if one does not affirm a child's gender identity, and not just in custody cases. The triad of words, health, safety, and welfare, will be used by CPS, judges, and police to take children away from parents like me who knew better than to concretize their child's gender identity. The penal code defines neglect as harm to a child's health and welfare. It also defines harming a child as causing the child's health to be endangered. Child abuse or neglect is defined in the penal code as endangering the health of a child. In a case last year entitled Thaw H, a minor was not returned to his parents because returning him to his family was not in the best interest of his health, safety, and welfare. So there we have it, folks. Any parent who does not affirm the gender identity of their child is an abusive parent. Upwards to 88% of all gender-confused kids will return to their being comfortable in their sex bodies if they are not affirmed. Do you really want to penalize parents for their belief in science?
Wow, that's California. But nothing about California makes any sense anymore in its legislative process. And I have empathy for the people who, for circumstances beyond their control, cannot leave the state. Because I would leave that state so damn fast. Because there's nothing that they're doing that I consider reasonable, humane, spiritual, or with common sense. And just look at the state. Yeah, why don't you go and see if there's a hotel open anywhere in San Francisco where you can have a good night's sleep. No. By the way, for those who keep hearing people say, you can't say something, it offends me. I'm not going to answer that. I'm going to let Stephen Fry, who I differ with on a lot of things, but on this one, he's got it. Quote, it is now very common to hear people say, I'm rather offended by that, as if that gives them the rights. It's no more than a whine. It has nothing to do. It has no purpose. It has no reason to be respected as a phrase. I'm offended by that. Well, so effing what? Stephen Fry. Richard Gale. I want to hear what the audience has to feel on these issues. What we do as an adult, that's up to us. Look, I never will forget the time that I went home, and it was in the 1970s, early 70s, and I went to the one and only local health food store, and I bought my mom two shopping bags worth of food, and because I was going down about every month to see how she was doing. And when I got there and I started to take it out of the bag, she said, sit down for a moment. I did. She said, I really appreciate the fact that you care about my health. And see all the books of yours up there, those seven bestsellers? Everyone in town, everyone in Parkersburg where I meet, and says, oh, we saw Gary on Johnny Carson, on Mike Douglas, on Merv Griffin, all these shows. They're all very proud of you. But I haven't opened any of those books, and I won't. The books I like reading are these novels. And you see me look in the refrigerator. Everything that you would say I shouldn't eat, I'm eating. I'm smoking three packs a day. I'm drinking coffee all day and colas. And when we go out to socialize, we drink also. Now, do you think that we're stupid? I said, no, you're not stupid. You're all very kind. You're all very thoughtful. You know, my parents would have given their lives in World War II, as many others did, or at least put themselves in harm's way. I said, no, I said, Mom, there's a difference between not being stupid and making wrong choices. Smart people make wrong choices all the time. She said, but understand this, that's my choice. So you have to respect that none of us, not your brothers, not your father, none of your aunts and uncles, as much as they love you, they don't want to hear what you have to say. You talk about hearing something you didn't want to hear. I didn't want to hear that, but I had to. And I, you know, spent the day and then went on my way home. I was just thinking about, wow, now I understand why none of the people that I grew up with are ever going to change. And they haven't. None that I know of. None of my friends did. It's that belief that my choice, my body, my mind, you can have yours. And I learned to respect that. I didn't like it, but I learned to respect it. To that day, till now, I've never once encouraged any of my friends or family members to do the right thing. Whatever they do, they have to at least be responsible for it, good or bad. If they get sick by some reason, come to see me, of course I'm going to help them, and I do. But we have to understand, when you say, my body, my choice, believe it, but at least do your homework. Don't be, you know, don't be making an impulsive decision or a decision you think you're doing the right thing. Let me read you something that came through. Now, you consider this just stupid. You consider it a parody. One of our listeners, Patricia Lucardi, sent this to me, and then Steve Brown, another friend, responded. Listen to what this person says. Quote, they knew. Why didn't the unvaccinated do more to warn us? The unvaccinated knew what we didn't. Some of them said too little. Most of them said nothing at all. A lot of blood is now on their hands. And by the way, this came from a legitimate website. Quote, as the world struggles to come to terms with the devastating effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, one question that continues to surface is why the unvaccinated didn't do more to warn us about the potential dangers of being injected. While well-intentioned citizens lined up, did the right thing, and received their COVID-19 vaccinations, now seeming to do more harm than good, their unvaccinated friends stood by and let them do it. Some of them said too little. Some said nothing at all, even though they knew what we didn't. Our blood is now on your hands. Wow. Boy, if that's not the dumbest statement I've ever heard. Let me just put this to rest. Every time we had an opportunity, we told you, look for the truth. We presented on this program, we presented more information than any other radio program in the United States. More original articles, more investigative reports, 43. We had doctors on explaining the dangers. We had every kind of expert on explaining what would happen with vaccines. I never told you to take it or take it. I said, it's your choice, but do your homework. Well, clearly, this person believes that if you're so misinformed because you simply trust, are you the same people who supported the war in Iraq because weapons of mass destruction, the destruction of Libya? Are you now going to blame the bombing by Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Rice and all the others participating in it? Are you going to blame that on the citizens who survived in Libya? This is the dumbest argument. Get a brain before you make a statement that is this absurd. All right? Everyone who could was saying what was wrong, and every one of them was punished. I didn't see a single person, not Howard Stern, not Jimmy Fallon, or these other people, or any Rachel Maddow. I saw no one being condemned, ridiculed, mocked, or discouraged from saying, get the vaccine, it's safe and effective, you won't get infected, and you won't spread it to other people. All lies. So if you're open to propaganda without challenge, without debate, without discussion, that's on you. For those who did say there's a problem with this, they lost their jobs, they lost their careers, and frequently lost their family members. One of my closest friends has a partner whose son was asked, don't take the vaccine, know the facts. He took the vaccine, he died immediately thereafter. So who do we punish? The vaccinated? No. We punished the unvaccinated. We had virtually a 3.5-year apartheid vaccine state in the world. My God, if that's someone from this audience, stop listening to this radio program. Stop. Listen to Howard Stern. All right? Richard Gale, in the time we have, and we got to say goodbye to our BA audience, we decided to take a look at the issues we're not addressing because we'd rather spend all of our time making sure that no one misstates a pronoun. But instead, here's what's not being addressed that's going to impact everyone in this audience, just like electromagnetic pulse is going to impact anyone. That's why I said there's no escape, okay? And no one's speaking up, only a handful of people, handful of activists, but my medical community is not speaking up, the scientific community is not speaking up, and those who want to speak up are not given a platform. They are denied this. So what are people going to do? Why didn't you do more? Why did 19 articles? Why in the hell didn't you read any of them? Tell us what we're not doing that we should be ashamed of ourselves for not making a priority in the trivia, the nonsense that we do make a priority. The form is yours. Oh, I'm sorry. He dropped off. Okay, let's, well, Richard's not there. I'm going to say,
I don't know what happened.
Okay, Richard, you're on the air.
Yeah. Okay.
Go through the issue. I understand. Richard, go through the issues that we're not paying attention to, doing nothing about, that's going to have a negative impact
on us.
Okay,
well, we only have a few minutes left here, so I'm going to kind of put it down to the brass tacks, and that is basically, I think people have to really look at the fundamentals. and then to be able to recognize the whatever laundry list you want to put forward, it all stems from that. And there's two primary threats that I see. One is the external threats of nature, the environment, the natural world. And then there are those threats that are self-inflicted. The self-inflicted threats due to ignorance, the lack of self-awareness, you know, the hedonic pleasures, the pseudo-happiness that is prioritized over any kind of authentic well-being or being having our actions and decisions being guided by universal values of compassion or kindness, empathetic joy, you know, an authentic equanimity. And so when we prioritize just our fundamental Darwinian biological pursuits, you know, just this kind of survival of the fittest or the most crass expressions or our hyper-hormonal drives that give rise to a spectacle of ridiculous entertainment that just kind of perverts any authentic beauty. It's kind of like we're, you know, the Shakespearean character and, you know, Gloucester and King Lear who gouges his own eyes out. Because modern popular culture, which, you know, now government and education, our professional institutes support, it's gouged its eyes out. And what's left is just a freak show, you know, a display of just these deeper psychological disorders, the unresolved conditions that have become normalized. You know, it's like a boil festering. It's been festering in our society for poor decisions and policies. It just kind of breaks. So for me, there's these two major threats that we're seeing, and they're related. And one is this climate change, the ongoing environmental destruction, the loss of ecological systems that keep, in order to keep global capitalism at pace. And then, and this is my own personal one, but my other second one would really be U.S. military hegemony and the expansion of NATO Incorporated, which is now bringing us to the brink of not only World War III, but a potential nuclear exchange. So with respect to the climate change, this is the debate. You know, there's this debate going on between man-made climate change versus natural cycles of climate change. I think the wise position is to recognize that both are correct rather than getting caught up in the war of politicized ideas, which will never have any end. And when, as long as we're just focusing on the war of these views, then absolutely nothing gets done. It's just we're focusing on the theater. We're not focusing on any kinds of solutions. And surely, I mean, we can't alter all the natural atmospheric and the geological processes without serious consequences. I mean, certainly a large meteor could hit the Earth or enormous triggering of volcanic activity that darkens the sky and turns the world into an ice age, which has happened many times in the past geological ages, you know, even before humans. But, of course, both human and natural activities are interconnected into this vicious feedback loop. You know, you hit the atmosphere over here and it will respond over here, destroy the ecology here, such as the Amazon, and we'll have a cascade effect over there. And that's the nature of systems theory, you know, that drives the natural processes on Earth, and the body of science supports this. So I honestly don't know any solution for climate change anymore, and neither do any of our governments, which is why they're using such they're stuck in this hysterical, desperate efforts to use geoengineering, for example, and come up with whatever kind of a crazy idea, as long as you're going to be able to preserve the global capitalist trend of progress and innovation, which requires, in order to do that, you have to mine the earth of every last remaining resource available in order to do that. So, I mean, so I think thinking we can get off of fossil fuels tomorrow is a pipe dream. And let's be real. If you were to do it tomorrow, it would devastate the economy. Vast numbers of majority of the people who live in cities and suburban areas, it would be devastating for them. And it's this kind of weird catch-22 that we're in, and which leads to this other related self-inflicted threat. And that's the control of the global elite class over every legislation in our lives. I mean, nobody voted Gates or Peter Thiel, Bezos, Soros, the warmongers at the Council of Foreign Relations or the heads of the World Health Organization, the Wall Street giants. Nobody's voted them. And yet those are the ones that are controlling our lives. And I think when you look at that, you look and see where they put their money, you can see just all the other laundry lists of problems that we have, which we've spoken about on this program on different occasions. So That's my kind of a quick analysis of where we're at today.
Well, let's do this. Tomorrow, come back on and give the long list, because I want to go through it in some time. We'll set aside 20 minutes of tomorrow's show just to go through that. All right? This is just an overview today. Thank you, Richard. I am an optimist in this sense. Yes, I see all the destruction. I see what we're not doing that we could and choose not to at the individual and collective level. People don't want to change. They want someone else to make the change. They want a safe place to live, but they don't want to make it safe. I've seen in hurricane after hurricane, nobody was prepared. And I saw with the next hurricane, they didn't learn a lesson from the first one. I've seen people living in places that are clearly unsustainable, but they won't move. So tomorrow, I'm going to give some suggestions of those of you who do not want to be victims of your own hubris or be a victim of your own incompleteness, like the person who says, I did what I was told and I didn't question it. And now I condemn you for not making me more aware, as if anyone was born to convince someone else with a closed mind, with a hubris mind, with an indifferent mind, with a selfish mind, that somehow you're responsible for that person. You're not. You're responsible for yourself. So let us start to look at solutions that those who care about life and the future and the planet and harmony can live with. I'll deal with that tomorrow. Thank you all for listening today. Now stay tuned for Utrecht Lead. Have a nice day, everyone. And tonight, got a powerful program coming at 7 o'clock. You don't want to miss one tonight. This is going to be one of those real wow programs. 7 o'clock, PRN.live. Have a nice day, everyone.